stop, hit the black square, and then confirm.
I know that Nita comes and lets me know what you guys are doing every month when she comes back from the meetings that she's able to attend, and I think it just continues to build on what we talked about at the meeting when you were down here last. So I know that we are going to appreciate the data you guys are going to be able to pull together. I think the usefulness of that data and the ability to pull this data together just shows, as Colleen and I were just talking, the value of data, what I call data without boundaries, the buzzword, big data now, just not letting constraints or the type of data keep it out of the general consideration for being able to cross-cut it and use it to our advantage. And I think that this is a great example that can be pointed to for a lot of different areas in government and nonprofit and everything else as to how decisions are going to be made in the future. So I think it's great stuff. We're glad you're down here visiting with us. And we'll continue to stay involved as long as you guys will have us. All right. So with that, I will let you carry on with your meeting. But hope that you enjoy your time here.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Very much. All right, so I distributed the sign-in sheet, and that's coming around. So let's take a moment, especially since there's some new faces in the room, to go around and introduce ourselves by who you are, what neighborhood you come from, and then an organization that you're affiliated with. And that'll be it for the day. Why don't we start over here?
Okay. Hi, I'm Jane Paquette. I'm Vice President of the DeSoto Acres Association and actively very much involved in the county and neighborhoods, and that's how I met Ms. Lourdes, doing a number of wonderful things. But I'm also very much interested in data. My background is Fortune 100, 500 business management marketing emphasis, and I worked for Procter & Gamble. I worked for companies that had access to Nielsen data, statistical analysis, understanding data, how pertinent it is, the census data. I've looked at it and researched it for 2010. Data is what Brad was saying. That's the big emphasis. That is the mind that we have that we can really plumb, whether it's secondary or primary data. So I'm really very much interested in what you're doing here, not only from an association standpoint, but just because I have a general interest in how information can help us.
Yeah, I'm Tim Dutton. Pardon me. I live in Central Coconut, which is just north of downtown Sarasota. And I work for an organization called the Sarasota Community Studio, which focuses on that neighborhood as a neighbor and engaged with other neighbors.
And I'm Tempinto, and I think I've spoken with both of you before.
Yeah.
I'm not here.
Nice to
meet you. Also in Central Coconut, also with the community studio, which was established by neighbors, specifically focused on the neighborhood of.
Actually, that's a Cranberry Field.
I'm here mainly in place for Nancy Deloach's supervisor in our department, but I've come to this meeting before. I appreciate being a part of it.
I'm Nita Hester. I work for the city of Northport. I live in the Country Club Ridge neighborhood, which is just down the street. And
I think you covered it.
Did I?
Oh, yeah.
We have someone in the corner back here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Catherine Wolf. I'm the new community intern with Scope.
and this is my first meeting with them, and I'm very excited to get to know all of you, and I've been working directly with the data that you all have been giving us in the years in your involvement, so I've been going over some of the data recently, including it to get it onto the platform.
And your neighborhood?
I'm from Upland, so I don't know if that is part of the situation.
I think it is.
My street is, but half the streets in Upland are, and there are like four streets, so it's pretty tight. But
just north of Indian Beach, after I showed my new college, right?
My name is John McCartney. I'm here to represent SCOTE. I live in Marshall Manor. I'm probably the only person in my neighborhood that lives, but that's what the neighborhood's called. And happy to be here. Happy to be in Northport. Thanks for having us. And happy to see some new faces.
Yeah. My name is Laura Days Ramirez. I'm president of CONA, Council of Neighborhood Associations, and thanks to Jane for letting me know about this organization, what's happening here in SCOTE. And I also live on Fiesta Key. I've been an activist on Fiesta Key for 10 years, but I'm here on behalf of CONA. CONA has 70 neighborhoods among our members, and over the years they've had a lot of your type of technology, very low-key paper technology in trying to keep up with the neighborhoods. So I'm trying to bring it into the 20th century, much less the 21st century. And so when I heard SCOPE was doing this collaborative, I said, well, maybe I can learn a little bit of how I can bring all the neighborhood information we have and make it a little bit useful for us instead of the paper file copies that we've been used to in the past. We had started our membership drive recently, and we're already on our way of exceeding last year's membership. So we really hope to not only expand our membership, but also make it more advanced technologically.
And what does CONA stand for?
Special County Council of Neighborhood Associations. We've been around since 1961.
And Lourdes, when you say members, do you mean individuals or member neighborhood groups?
It's member neighborhood groups. Yeah. Of the 70, there are about 10 that are individuals, including three developers who support our organization, and a couple of civic groups. But most of the cars are neighborhood associations. You know, Lighthouse Center is one neighborhood that's a member. And I'm still working on DeSoto Acres.
Well, so long. Personally, I'm a member of CONA, but I am working on, in our next board meeting, we'll talk to our association about it.
But we have quite a few, and from everything from Old Englewood Village all the way up to the northern part, we have, and we get involved a lot of the zoning issues, so I attend a lot of meetings and dealing with that type of issue and helping the community out, whether we help support them directly in a zoning issue, or we just help them go along the process of how they deal with an issue. We work on that too, but we also follow budget hearings and other things for Sarasota County.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Ron Flynn. My neighborhood is Siesta Key, and I'm on the Siesta Key Association. And my background is I was with AT&T for 28 years. I was a network engineering manager, and I was also involved in systems development, GIS, geographical information system development for our network routing, microwave towers, overseas cables. And it was a real challenge in those days, the 80s and the 90s, because of GPS differential and that sort of thing. So we had to be a little bit more elaborate than they are now, since they took out the deviation of GPS.
Cold War's over.
But I'm also involved in my second career, real estate, and the real estate systems like Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com are GIS systems and very intensive GIS systems. So there's a lot of information that's geographical, orientated. So I'm very interested to see how this is going to progress.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Jim Bennett, and Northport is always a few minutes further away than I think. I live in Bennett, in the community of Sawgrass, which is a developer plant gate community, and I'm a member of the Bennett City Council. I finished compiling data for my community, and I have to get it sorted out so I can post it. But I have found, as an example, I'm going to have to draw the line at last June, because part of the community went through foreclosure from the original developer who lost his lots. And Pat Neal bought them. There were 84 of them. He has 18 left. That was only 2 years ago. He had 84 lots. So I'm struggling with how to manage this kind of change, this means a change of data. And I may figure something out, and I may not. I also want to note there was a column in the Herald Tribune today, which means it was probably in the New York Times yesterday or the day before, by David Brooks on data which needs to be read, although it's not entirely relevant to this. But the bottom line, of course, is that whenever you use or wrestle with data, you have to make sure you apply your heart to it.
And I'm Colleen McGue. I live in the Indian Beach Sapphire Shores neighborhood of Sarasota, and I work for SCOPE as a community data manager. So we have a pretty packed agenda today. I'd like to first review and approve meeting notes from January, which were posted on the collaborative website and to the Basecamp page. Does have a chance to look over?
I looked over. I did have one question.
Yeah.
Did we get the graphic design images?
No.
Okay.
I will explain that.
Okay. I know it was discussed, and I just wanted to ask that while it was in my head.
Yes, ma'am.
Other than that, I think.
Not that this is about the minutes, but taking minutes is an opportunity for the collaborative to share the responsibilities. Who's taking minutes for this?
Well, Catherine has offered to take minutes from SCOPE if we would like her to do that. If there's someone else who would like to share that responsibility, Nita's saying no. The meeting is being audio recorded through the room. These are microphones on the table. Yeah, Allison took notes last time.
So are there organizations or individuals who have not yet taken? I know that we have new people here today,
yeah.
So obviously that's true, but you know, we have really tried to pass it around.
Right. I think
with a small group today, if I forgot her name already.
Catherine
is willing, she'll do it today.
Yeah, we certainly don't want SCOPE to dominate the note-taking, since we're also facilitating the meetings. So, since there are a couple of meetings...
I think that's probably somebody trying to come in to do the minutes right now.
Tim, maybe what we should do is, before we close today, maybe if someone wants to volunteer to take minutes next time, and now we know who would be taking them next time.
That's a good idea.
And we don't have to decide it on the day of the show. So, maybe, you know, we can do that right now.
So, is everyone comfortable with Catherine taking minutes for this particular meeting?
Yeah.
Nodding of heads? Okay, good.
She's taken
minutes
before.
Not, yeah, so she did say that.
She wanted to take them.
Yeah. And is there a volunteer to take minutes for the next meeting?
When's the next meeting?
Well,
roughly
a month from now. It would be Wednesday, March 20th, and the time and place has yet to be decided.
You don't think we should have it in Northport anymore
than we have? Hey, pretty good.
Parking's good.
Yeah.
Parking was good, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice art exhibit.
Yeah. It changes everywhere.
So no one yet.
We'll draft them in the moment.
Okay. We'll get to that. Maybe once we decide when the meeting will be and where.
And where.
Take a person. So, okay.
And if they don't have reporting, if I'm there, I'll report them like that.
Great. That's certainly a good backup to have that reporting. Okay, so that's minutes for today. What about January minutes?
Do I have a motion?
I move that we approve the January minutes as is.
All right. Do you have a second? Thanks for that. All right. So moving on. First.
Everybody's going to vote.
Oh, are we going to vote?
Cool. Is everybody okay with that?
I'll vote yes.
Yes? I need to study up on my Robert's Rules of Order, I think.
Well, you get a motion, you get a second.
You get a second, and then you
do a discussion, and then you do a vote.
Okay.
Yeah.
Discussion? No? Vote?
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
When Kona has its neighborhood expo, we have that workshop, we'll invite you.
Thank you. I'll come to that workshop. So last meeting in January, we spent a lot of time talking about and orienting some new members to the community platform that the Urban Institute is working with us to create. Graphic design update. There has been some changes to the homepage. Here you'll notice it looks a lot like our Sarasota County Community Data Weebly website right now. Urban Institute's graphic designer, Mark Proust, fortunately for him, is on vacation in Belize for the month, which we did not realize at our last meeting. Rob Dana, who spoke to us over the phone, was able to make some cosmetic changes, but if everyone would take some time, look over the way the site currently looks, if you like that, make some comments on what you think could be changed or should be changed. You'll notice the navigation tabs up at the top have changed from the basic template that the Urban Institute uses. So we now have one tab for neighborhoods, which is our main focus. There's a tab for maps and data. Actually, if I click on this, we can go to the site. I want to load a website.
Well, let's get rid of the other one that you had there.
This one?
Is that your regular one? That's your regular one.
That's my PowerPoint. I want to go to this.
Do you have access to the current accounts here?
Here we go.
Okay.
We'll come back to the PowerPoint.
There you go.
Now
you should be able to get it. Okay. Where?
I just put it in there.
In here? Yep, over by the first one.
Oh. Okay, sorry, I don't use Internet Explorer. So here's the way we're looking right now. We have our neighborhoods page, this is our home page. The map is zoomed out to include all of Sarasota County, and each of these are the neighborhoods.
you have a portal that allows the user to scroll through and pick their neighborhood, or you can choose your neighborhood here on the map and click enter that way. This feature to define the boundaries of your neighborhood is not yet active. There's the maps and data tab, which always takes a very long time to load. And this is the Urban Institute's standard community platform is one that has all of the nonprofit data loaded into it. So these are all the nonprofit, all the information that Urban Institute has for nonprofit locations around the county. And each of these, if you click on them, you know, you can go to them and find out all that information.
So I think that one actually, once the system is built, there'd be no need for that maps and data. Because the neighborhoods have all the maps and data, and that should all go in the...
This should all be part of the neighborhoods page. That's what I was thinking, too. I wanted to check with everyone else, though, and make sure that...
Otherwise, my fear is that it really foregrounds institutions and nonprofits, and that's the primary way in which community changes for the better.
Yeah. That's good. That was a question that they were hoping
to answer.
I mean, the map and data really is neighborhood maps and data. That could all be, this should all be together on one page, right?
Well, the way you get to it, you know,
is through your neighborhood.
I was noticing that they highlight businesses, the business addresses within wherever they are at. Is that part of what you want to maintain?
Yeah, I went into this site a little, this particular one, and we have an opportunity to clean this up because there's a lot of stuff that I know
they
it's part of their
everything.
National database,
yeah.
So that's, it has certain, like it has a church that's in a neighborhood where it's really the pastor's house.
Mm-hmm.
Churches in three neighborhoods over, you know, that kind of stuff. There's local knowledge. This is the beauty of having the neighborhood ordinance, is you actually know what's in your neighborhood. So there's stuff in DeSoto Acres, I gotta think, that isn't. And the opposite is probably true, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we can make this actually local instead of some national 990-based database.
I thought accuracy would be a little off.
Yeah.
Just looking at my
little,
our elementary school, the big hub of our neighborhood, is off by about 3 blocks.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the kind of stuff that we're going to have to, and this is a perfect example of how neighbors actually know stuff, as opposed to guys hanging out in Washington. So it'll be a chance for us to make it really, you know, us, meaning the neighbors, the community, to make it really effective.
When I'm loading data to the GIS systems that I use right now, there's a calibration tool. You get a map like this, and you can actually drag your icon right to your Google street map.
What I suspect is the case is this NCCIS, or whatever it's called, is a national charity. So they use the tax forms as the basis, and the tax forms or sometimes I'm going to use this guy's church again. It's probably filled out by the minister, and he may have put his home address on it, even though the church's address is a mile and a half away. So my guess is the database itself has that as the root. So we know better, and you know, so we're going to get a change. So it's a combination of both what you're saying, it's just in the wrong place, and it's the wrong data.
And then there's a collapse of nonprofits that don't come.
Absolutely. Right.
And then you might have some that don't exist anymore.
There were a bunch, by the way, that I'd never heard of in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
In Central Coast.
I was surprised. I have access to a couple of very small nonprofits that don't file a 990. They do file a 990N, and they are listed on the they are getting down to the smaller and even structure.
Yeah. $125,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on the technical side of the back end, these were all a map upload that the Urban Institute did. So one thing we can do, and we'll need to do, I think Rob also mentioned that there's duplication of, you know, same location, same nonprofit. They haven't figured out a way yet to get at that. So our local knowledge will be really important in that sense too. And as we get further on and decide, you know, who's going to have what roles on the back end with, you know, its scope as the super administrator, and then below that our neighborhood administrators for each of their neighborhood pages, and everybody has different permissions on the back end. Maybe the neighborhood administrators can have the ability to delete or add assets to the back end. But I will make sure that this map with the little icons gets merged with the neighborhood map. For one, and then we'll start looking at the accuracy after that.
There is a guy in the Sodres, and he happens, some of you have seen the slideshow that I developed for the community, and he's in one of the pictures, and his wife is in the other with the cat, with the eyes. And he's a professional out of Washington, D.C., as a database manager, in a position that he can't talk about. So that means that he's probably as sophisticated as they come. And I would like to talk to him and get him interested in this operation a little bit down the road, because what he's particularly good at, and he manages the community website and the database underneath it, what we're going to find is that there are going to be combinations of interests that will want to access the same kind of data in different ways. That's the simplest way I can put it now. And as we see how people want to use the database, we will get a better idea of what kind of parameters we want to set out. But it's going to take a while, because we can't tell how people are going to want to put things together.
Is there a way to benchmark against census data? Not to digress from the agenda items, but the census data has a whole plethora of systems being able to select criteria in order to sort their data. And you know, they've been doing this for a number of years, and it's really just straight data. You don't get into any of the sociographic or psychographic aspects that a neighborhood could involve. But they have a really good menu for you to select through that.
Well, all of the census data is going to be available on this platform as well.
Oh, understand. But using it just as a way of looking at criteria that they select to start out with, that's my suggestion.
Of community indicators, maybe, or demographics?
The demographics themselves.
The demographics themselves, how people select to use the data with different sort of search emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you go on the website before the meeting?
Not right before. It was about a month ago.
Okay.
But that, so you're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
The databases that are being loaded.
Exactly. I'll get to that. But thanks for bringing that up, Jane. So I just want to go through each of these tabs. Really, the Weebly website has been sort of merged with the platform for the time being. So here's this. This is almost exactly one of the pages that's on the Weebly website. You've got all of the meeting minutes and PowerPoints from the data collaborative meetings. There's a list of the collaborative partners.
I couldn't get that to work.
This page?
No, that list of collaborative partners.
This is on the Sarasota County website, right?
No, it's not. It's on the...
It's linked to it, I'm sure.
Because they have a neighborhood section,
right?
Neighborhood services.
Yeah, they have the whole department.
And typically, there's a rep here. There just isn't today.
So I was wondering if that was linked to that website, to this scgov.org.
Well, I'll check the links and make sure that all the
it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I'll make sure all the links are working and that the right documents are uploaded and that sort of thing.
There it is.
Yeah, it looks like it's.
Yeah, I couldn't get to do that earlier.
I had a problem when I first went to it. Since the changes were made, you have to clear your cache in your search choices in your web browser, and that might be the problem you're having. Because I clicked on this page and it was showing up all strangely to me. Community data resources, this is straight from our website, and we'll continue to put documents up here. And then Get Connected is a newer tab, and I forget what they had it named on the standard platform that the Urban Institute creates, but this was the origin of this was so community members could connect with nonprofits. We probably aren't going to use it for that purpose. It might be part of how we use it, but it needs to get populated, and then we can use it for whatever we want. Redesign this page, and that's something to think about. So, go back to there. So that was the graphic design changes. More changes will be to come. This is the first item on Mark's agenda when he gets back from Belize, is to get with us so that we can make it look the way that we really want it to look, which is a little more sophisticated than it is now. So an update on the data sets that are currently being loaded: demographics by neighborhood and census block, registered voters by neighborhood, party affiliation, demographics, and age cohorts. Boundary files are going to be automatically updated from the Sarasota County government page. We have a way to link that so that as they get automatically updated, they will automatically update on the site. Impervious surface area by neighborhood. They're not currently loaded on this page, and I'm very disappointed to realize that. So I think Rob must be having some sort of problems on the back end that he was unable to communicate with me before this morning. But he has all of those files, and they'll be uploaded in the next 2 weeks. But Jane, to your point, you were asking about the census. This is the problems that are going on in the back end. These things are showing up in the wrong place, and there's test data in here that should not be. But boundary systems within your neighborhood, you can click on this and see the other neighborhoods that are nearby you, for example. You go on the site and play with it when you get a chance. There's also, and these are still being uploaded as well, the indicators of well-being. Do you have a question? You look like you're...
No, wait. I'm writing it down for me.
Okay.
And why is it that, and that was just a question that was raised at the last meeting, that something seems to be delaying? I mean, all this data has been ready. It's been at least pulled together since September. So what is it that...
Well, it's been all pulled together, but it has to be in a different format to get into the platform than the format that we use for GIS. So, unfortunately, those formats are very different from each other. And Nita and Trevor and I had a meeting this past month to figure out how do we make this really easy so that we can upload it in real time and this isn't a problem. The Urban Institute and I are still trying to work out a way where that's going to be possible. It's not right now. The back end of the site is, it's not user-friendly yet.
So, I just want to reflect on, in September we chose as a collaborative to make a decision to go forward with the idea we tried out for a year.
Right.
And
this is part of trying that out.
We're discovering this now not to say that this is the way it'll end up,
right,
but it could be that this isn't a platform that works.
Right.
Because of whatever problems that we're discovering in the process.
Yeah. Originally, we didn't anticipate that there would be all these technical problems. We thought it was so compatible with GIS that we could just upload our shapefiles to it, and it would be able to read all of that in a real-time way, and that's not the case. So Nita and Trevor and I are going to have a conversation with Rob this upcoming month to see if, to figure out, basically, put all of our heads together and figure out if there's some way that they can redesign the back end that our shapefiles as they are can just go in, which would be a lot easier for us. But it's not there yet. I mean, as the way it currently is, and this is another, this is the next item on the agenda, is the neighborhood polygon style. Our neighborhood style that we're using, you know, there's these vast empty places. They're not empty, but it looks empty if you look at the map where there's no neighborhood polygons. And the way that the system is set up, there's no way that you could draw your polygon on there and pull the data on the back end. It's just not linked that way. So one thing that Nita and Trevor and I had discussed was, Nita said, well, why don't we just draw all of the neighborhoods on the county map like we did in Northport? That will at least make it so that it's all populated and we could have, I mean, this is a topic that has, that was brought up in the past, of course, but it, on the back end, it's going to take more work as neighborhoods change and as we get more data sets, we're going to have to go back, go revert backwards, and then recalculate for each of those new neighborhoods, and then re-upload them again.
So one of the hopes was that there would be the capacity, as there are, frankly, on other websites, to be able to draw your own polygon, where it is that you think your neighborhood is, because not, you know, everybody has their own sense of what it is. And those websites are, and I think the one that we looked at last month was in Miami. And certainly Esri and the community analyst allows you to do that. So there's something cooking that other people have figured out that doesn't seem to be true here.
Right. Also, it depends on money, because the ESRI
stuff
is really expensive.
Yeah. We now are in our, like, 28-30-day trial.
Well, you know, I know that the urban district had indicated that it would really take a community designating somebody or a group of somebody 20 hours a week. So has it been that 20 hours a week has been devoted?
Much more than that. Much more than that. To be perfectly honest.
Since September?
Yes. Definitely.
Not to digress, I don't know, tell me if you've looked at this or not. When you go into the county data and behind the GIS map, it's all based upon a numerical code of what they define as that subdivision, defined as neighborhood. So, for example, the neighborhood for DeSoto Acres, I'll make this up because I don't remember, is 01862. And then you go down to whatever, and it's Northport, and you're down there, and it's 0059, whatever. And that defines the boundaries. So when I go into the GIS map, I click on it, and I can see what the subdivision code is, and everyone that's in that defines that code is then defined within that boundary. So have you looked into the numerical code to be able to drive that polygon mapping?
Are those numerical codes tied to the sections?
Yes.
That sounds to me like
it's
the codes that are tied to the sections.
County property appraiser records.
Correct.
Yeah,
so that's property ID number code.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's not just the PID, it's actually a subdivision code.
They have subdivisions.
Okay.
They're based on the plot.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is that what you use to create the neighborhood?
No.
I think
those are free form.
The discussion in the past has been that this is intended to be about how people organize themselves as opposed to a lot of the plat systems and everything are sort of remnants of the past, but not necessarily how anybody would socially identify themselves. So the purpose was for this to be really a tool that's used by residents primarily, not by, I mean, it might also be used by others, but really by residents. And so it might be that in the first phase there are areas that aren't lighting up because there haven't been a group of residents there who kind of... There's the issue about what do you do with the data that doesn't then fall into any of the areas that have been identified. But in terms of why those kinds of boundaries haven't been in the past, it's for that reason.
Is it worthwhile to start with, here is how it's defined in this area, and then you change from that point?
Yeah,
we would, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's been a long time since I actually figured that out. Because I didn't understand it either, and now the light bulb just went off. But the business analyst and convenience analyst, that's exactly what they do. They allow you to do drive times. They allow you to do buffer. They allow you to choose whatever you want for your polygon. And then it takes the data from and aggregates it up to a report. But it's using, I'm going to use business analyst, it's using the business it points information and the census points information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you can use the blocks, block groups, block points. And then all it's doing is it's taking what you put as your boundary and it's choosing all the points that are in there and aggregating it up.
Mm-hmm.
Have they got anything like that? Or
see,
did
that,
they
that,
say they were going to do
that's
that?
Something
the
should have.
That's
totally
a beautiful
different.
Animal.
It is a beautiful animal.
But what it requires is, it requires those who are willing to give their data
at that scale.
And so far what's happened with the school district and some of the county departments as well is that there's been reluctance to that. So fear that it would somehow be possible for somebody to, let's say, define their boundary at such a small scale that it could break confidentiality or whatever the case may be. We've talked about how that could be addressed because you could make it such that the system won't let you define an area that's smaller than a certain either number of people or square mile area, right? So mm-hmm. It could be designed that way. But I think that the thing that has actually prevented us from going that route to begin was really the local partners who are data stewards more so than the county on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And until that happens, until it gets to the box, it's really the box or the address section, it's going to be tough to do what Esri does.
Mm-hmm.
But even the Esri, even like community analyst doesn't let you do it at the box scale. Like as soon as you try to get it to that level, it collapses.
Yeah.
So it's built in with a...
Oh, that's the online.
Yeah.
You have the desktop stuff. I have business analyst desktop, and I have the box one.
Yeah, mine was free and yours wasn't.
I paid a lot of money.
Well, and interestingly enough, I mean, Trevor used community analysts to look at the demographics by neighborhood, and he identified 24 neighborhoods that were unusable because
right.
of the size of, or the
right.
number of people. And so
yeah,
I think deleted all of those neighborhoods
yeah.
from our shapefile yeah. because...
It was a null value.
Right.
Yeah.
So where does that leave us?
Well, I think it does two things. I think part of it is to continue the negotiation with these guys, but the other one is what Alice is getting to, is that part of us as data collaborative, you know, each of us are full-fledged partners who want to offer up our data at the scale and frequency that allows that to occur. So even, you know, last month, 2 months ago, the health department basically wouldn't even get to the block group level, if you remember. So that's an example of how we need to continue the negotiation and partnerships inside this county that's going to allow us to get to the point where that data is at that.
And in the meantime?
Again, this is to see if this is even a good enough tool, right?
Right.
In the meantime, we're working to get it uploaded into the current neighborhood polygons that we have so that we
right.
can at least have something to play with.
So that it's at least at the
yeah.
neighborhood scale, even though you can't do your own polygon.
Right.
And that brings us right back to the, if you have open spaces with no neighborhoods, those people can't get any information.
They cannot.
So we have to put all the neighborhoods in. At least something.
Well, the
other
one
right now
goes back. I mean, you still have over 200 neighborhoods where people could be. I mean, I guess I'd say, unless there are people that are banging down the door saying, dear God, let us have access to this data. I mean, there's a certain, isn't it for the purpose of getting it used? I mean, all of the Kona neighborhoods are already in there, right?
That's
except
true.
For maybe the ones
that we had
were too small. All of the CCNA, anything that was through that was already identified through the county. It is a problem. Like, for instance, our neighborhood is part of Newtown, and a lot of Newtown is invisible on that map, so it's requiring us to go and use other workarounds, whether it's community analysts or whatever. But I think that at least it's not like it's only going to be a few neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be great if somebody started showing up and saying,
whoa, let us in.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing
when
is
that happens,
When that happens, then, do we have to back up and go back to all the different data stewards to get the information on that polygon now and load it up? That's
what certain data stewards, we will have to do
right.
that.
Yeah, and that's awkward and doesn't really encourage...
Yeah.
Well, just to be clear, that every one of these data stewards are full-fledged partners at this table. So that's what we're talking about. And this thing's not going to be built out on day one. So we're going to build it.
If the school district and all the other sources would say absolutely, if the health department at the county scale would give the same data that we're able to get from the state at this point, absolutely, we must build it from now. But the sense is that far there's such skittishness amongst partners. I mean, we heard from the health department, we heard from the school district, that it just seems like at least being able to show local data stewards how it could get used would be...
There's a little bit of build it and they will come,
even
if it's not fully built out.
There's definitely that. My concern that I'm feeling now that I've been trying to make this back end work is that this platform doesn't have the capacity to do the analysis that we really want it to do. So I'm doing all of the analysis and then we're putting
it in.
What
would be an example?
So the example would be if you wanted to see the... supervisor of elections data for a different polygon, and you wanted to see, to calculate the number of registered Republicans in your polygon on this map. You can't, I mean, the data is not loaded by location in this map, it's loaded by the polygon. And so I'm the one who's calculating the number of registered voters in that polygon, and then uploading, linking it to this neighborhood file that's on the map. It's just, it's not in the platform by location, it's in it by number per neighborhood.
Are they using all the neighborhoods that we have with them?
Yes. Which, so that gets back to Allison's point. I mean, we have something.
Well,
we will have something to play with.
For what she's talking about, because I'm working with this too, because I got it as person who was trying to campaign, so I had data up to June 2nd. You need to have a little program that will take the voter list, which you can shift into by street. Then you have to take all the streets in your neighborhood, and you have a little program to pull that out of the voter list, which won't do it for you. And put it into your neighborhood database, and that's going to be 80% okay, except where you will find, and there's lots of instances, where a street is more, only part of that street's in the neighborhood, so you kind of have stuff outside, and this is like,
it's
1, 2, 3, 4, you can't do it with a
I'm wondering whether, the voter data is public, right?
Yes.
So whereas some of these other ones, there's a skittishness factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think the voter data would be a set that perhaps could be given to the Urban Institute and say, almost in a way of testing the limits of their technology and saying, we'd like you to upload this data set for us to see whether this community platform will be able to do it with other data sets when the time comes, but at least do it for this data set to begin, and then work out the bugs relative to that data set. If they can't do it with that one, it's not likely that they'd be able to do it when the time came with the other set.
Well, and somebody somewhere may have a program that does this, because the voter lists are similar here and in Texas and et cetera. I don't know. They would know better than probably we would know.
Don't you think the original database of the voter list is address specific?
It is, yeah.
So
it's address specific, but we don't give it to Urban Institute in that form, and they can't calculate.
They don't
plot all of the points in the platform.
Uh-huh.
That it's not built for that yet. But we could ask them if they could build it for that feature.
Yeah.
The polygon and then aggregate from all the points that are in that polygon.
It's the way it has to be if it's going to work for us.
Which tells us that's how we need to have all the community data stakeholders contribute their data.
Ultimately, but I still think that,
So that's the goal we need to be working for.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. That's ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's all the points that you make your own polygon and you select all the points that that's on.
Even if the points are secret on the back end,
that's
you
right.
can't actually see
Correct.
The points.
But we now have at least some contributors who have contributed at the neighborhood scale.
Yes.
So let's
work with it.
Let's make it happen.
So update on data stewards. We had a great meeting with Supervisor of Elections. They're going to be contributing their data set monthly to us on registered voters and voter turnout in the polls. Good meeting with the Sheriff's Office. We finally connected with whoever was the right person to send us the data in the format that we really need it, which is by address location of arrest. So we've got all the arrest data that's being cleaned and will be in the platform in the next 2 weeks.
Colleen finally broke through the Sheriff's Office. We actually sat with about 9 people from IT to upper level management and had the conversation that we needed to have about the data. So, and they were very forthcoming with wanting to share.
Yeah, and they have been all along. It was just a matter of getting in the format that we really needed it to be. So with that mix of people, we just have the right person there, I think. But they had experience in GIS, so she knew exactly what we needed, and now we've got it, which is great. We had a meeting with Michael Brennan from the Health Department. He's still not quite comfortable giving it the data set that we would like to us at the neighborhood level. But he did connect me with folks in Tallahassee who might be able to do that. So we're going to keep pushing on that.
They're worried about HIPAA in part.
Of course, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
HIPAA. Health and Privacy Act.
The answer to that question is not readily available.
Well, actually, we're having a fine time collaborating with folks in Tallahassee and the Health Department, so hopefully it'll be successful.
Yeah.
What kind of information are you trying to, what's the data set?
It's deaths, births, low birth weight. It wasn't infectious diseases, but that type of thing.
You asked about HIPAA. It is a law passed in the Clinton administration designed to protect the confidentiality of medical records. I'm going to leave it at that, more than that. But the problem is that with health department data, as we were discussing earlier, if the neighborhood is too small, like it's 10 people, and you put in the data set for those 10 people, it may violate HIPAA because it's going to tell you who had cancer and who had a cold and stuff like that. For example, in Venice, the airport administrator had a heart attack and he had a quadruple bypass or triple bypass, it's 39 or something. But we couldn't be told that under the theory that it violated HIPAA regulations. I mean, this is an example of a set of regulations that has gotten to the point where 90% of interpretations are absurd. Okay, so we have to deal with that.
We're working on it. We don't have any neighborhoods in our file anymore that are less than 10 people, so hopefully we can reach a point where we're able to show some of that data, because it is really important information that, in terms of community indicators that people would like to see.
What's your minimum size for a neighborhood?
Sorry?
What is your minimum size for a
neighborhood? That's a good question. Okay. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
I can get back to you on that, though.
Could be a condominium complex.
There are some that would fit.
Like 9 units?
Have to be more than that, I think.
So you'd exclude some condominium complex
mm-hmm.
by number of units?
We wouldn't use number of units as the identification, but there would be some condominium complex that wouldn't fit for privacy reasons. And for statistical sample purposes, too. All right, well, we also had been working with the Green Map folks, and they have some updated data that they're ready to share as part of a platform on green business partners. And they're also collaborating with Transition Sarasota to update a data set that's related to food, and so that's something that we'll have available on the platform as well. So now, I'm going to get to our data collaborative agreement discussion. I have some items to distribute. I sent out via email and via the Basecamp list this draft of a collaborative agreement of understanding, and it was drafted from several forms. One that was the initial form that we had distributed to data steward members at SCOPE last year, a form that Jim Bennett had drafted, and the form that the CHIP uses for their memorandum of understanding with their partners. And you'll...
It's taken on a life of its own.
It's become very large. I didn't print it front and back, which maybe I should have, but you know, it has some background on the collaborative, the purpose, or draft of the purpose of the collaborative, our values and behaviors, which some of these we pulled from old SCOPE values and behaviors and our study groups. Responsibilities of data stewards and collaborative members, the agreement duration, and then general provisions, and finally your data areas of interest and contribution.
I can tell you that I have a comment on the agreement duration.
Okay.
And I read it through a couple of times here, but what constitutes active?
Well, that's a good question.
So I want to piggyback on Nina's comments, and basically maybe think in terms of the challenges that a collaborative deals with. And that's that I think we want to have as easy entry and exit from collaborations as possible.
Right.
Because people want to be there because they want to be there. And because you're getting something out of it. And so if we think in terms of any sort of thing that feels like it's a way of us saying, yeah, I'm into that, that's really what we're talking about. Some way of saying, sign me up. I think what we need to be thinking about is the lofty purpose that we're trying to accomplish. And that's the most powerful piece of this. I would say that the background just about doesn't matter. That the lofty purpose really is an attempt to make very complex data that's heretofore been generally unavailable to citizens in a real way, available to them in digestible ways so that citizens, residents, can actually make decisions in addition to institutions. That doesn't happen very much at all anywhere. So that's really what we're trying to do. That's pretty big. And then the things that feel like values, I have two reactions to that. Mm-hmm. One is I think those are really the kinds of things that, you know, when you're in a meeting, you may be talking about. But I would rather have there be an environment where people feel like they can come in, give their two cents, really not feel like there's a whole lot of barriers to candid, open, honest exchange. And I worry a little bit about these things sort of washing, making people feel so rigid that they can't contribute in a way or react in a way that's honest and sincere. And I don't think, it doesn't feel like this is the right place for those. The right place for them is in the moment. you know, that's the role of the facilitator, you know, to burden you guys. That's the role the facilitator plays whenever a meeting is in place. So I would suggest that these get leaned, that they get, they really are oriented around, no, values go away. They're really oriented around purpose, and, you know, so I'm signing up to be, to help contribute my data, information, and ideas. Those are the two pieces of this that feel the most important. Then it gets, it takes away this thing of acting. I'm here because I want to be here and I want to contribute. And I'm getting something out of it because it makes sense to me. But anything other than that feels like we're trying to codify the idea of a sort of a natural, sort of organic place. I hardly ever think that's a good idea.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my two cents on this.
Yeah, what does everyone else think?
I really think we should wait one more meeting. No offense, but this is not the full group. And we have three people, so that makes it really hard for them to make a snap decision. They haven't heard everything else that's been going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would recommend that we move this discussion to the next meeting.
Okay.
One more meeting.
However, let me mention, because you started with the active, you can insert active means a judgment being made by somebody else than the person involved. Instead of that, you could substitute remains interested in. That shifts the judgment to that person. If you don't hear from that person in 18 months, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. They may be very interested in their mother died, or you could give that any description. It depends on what you want that paragraph to do.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that what we want is people at the table who want to contribute their ideas and, to be honest with you, their data. So, however we go about doing that in such a way that facilitates that, that's what we want. And I think that happens mostly by creating a sense of energy and relevance and significance to the effort that we're about. That's how an enthusiastic, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. That's going to get the school board to feel one of two ways, to be honest with you. Either we have pictures of them in embarrassing positions, or we're excited about this idea. So, and I think it'd be more people would be excited about this idea. But I do think this is a cool thing that a community can do, and that's really what we want to trade on.
Yeah, I think it comes across to me as a very bureaucratic form, and I think Jim, you were going to talk last time about how a collaborative is a different beast, you know, and to have enough in it, if there's anything that makes people, like you're saying, feel skittish about, that they need to be whatever, Jim, you talked about last time in terms of the legal, just enough of a light layer of, you know, so people don't feel like they're going to be held, you know, their firstborn is going to be taken away if something goes awry or whatever, but at the same time, or their firstborn, you know, data. But otherwise, I think that a lot of this can come out. And I agree about the values of these. I don't think that that's an appropriate section for a document like this. And I think that if it has a clear statement of the purpose, general sort of statement about the desire and willingness to contribute data, information, ideas, then that would probably be sufficient.
I think you could anticipate a better discussion when there are more people. If you ask everybody after this meeting, is there too much here and what do you think ought to come out, you're going to get a bunch of different responses, but
yeah.
I think it's worth asking. That it is. Otherwise, you start from scratch again.
Yeah, so next month.
All right, tabled.
But I would also add that we do what Jim says and send out an email having everyone say which sections do you want to keep in, which sections do you want to take out, and then what sections do you think need more information or less information.
And some people will ignore it.
So pointed questions.
Pointed questions so that we get some answers that we're looking for here.
What to leave in.
Okay. Sounds good. Action item. All right. Results collaborative survey. So I'm not going to go through every detailed question, plus some of the questions provoked strange responses, which makes me think the question itself probably wasn't the best question to ask. But I'm going to go, there's three in particular that stood out to me as important. At least for some discussion today and further discussion later, since we don't quite have a quorum today. Question number two, the members of the data collaborative represent a cross-section of those who have a stake in what we're trying to accomplish. The majority of people who responded disagreed with that statement. And, you know, to me this signifies we just need to be bringing more people to the table here so that more people are part of the group. Which we've got new people here today, so.
We had new people last time.
Yeah, we had new people last time, so those are good things. You know, we can perhaps brainstorm as a group who else we really feel should be part of these discussions. Other question that I wanted to look at was question number seven. Which was when the collaborative group makes major decisions, there is always enough time for members to confer with colleagues about what the decision might be. Most people agreed, but I thought one of the other responses was particularly interesting, which was there's too much time wasted on collaborating and discussing decisions. We should set up separate committees to focus on specific areas to make decisions. So that would really change the nature of our meetings. A lot.
I like the fact that it says too much time wasted on collaborating. It's very collaborative to leave that seat.
Well, I recognize there, for the past couple months, there has been a lot of time spent, you know, talking about process and how, you know, how we take notes or, you know, how we make decisions as a group and that kind of thing. Maybe part of that was there needs to be more action too, and that's point taken for the facilitators. And question number 23, which was kind of a similar, well, it was about the agenda as organized by quadrants of data sets and stewards, platform and technologies, quality of life indicators, and reflection for decision making as creating the right structure for monthly collaborative meetings. And one person has said meetings should be, quote, task force oriented, not so all inclusive, because nothing gets accomplished. So, you know, and there were enough, it was pretty split in terms of who responded to this, or how people responded to this question. So some disagreed, some didn't have any opinion. One person agreed, but you know, it might be time to rethink the way that we organize the monthly meetings.
You know, I think the part of the issue has been that there really hasn't been any major change in that last month. You know, we had a presentation by an urban institute that was objective, the same presentation that we had several months earlier. Mm-hmm. So the frustration that nothing's getting accomplished is probably an accurate reflection of the fact that there hasn't been a lot of movement. I think we have to be careful about assuming that it's 2 or 7 responses.
It's not a sufficient sample of people who are saying that. It's pretty split. If for 7 people, it's pretty split all over. So we'll take the survey with a grain of salt.
How many people, what was your total universe that you sent this out to? What was the total potential response?
25, I think, was the total universe.
Okay.
So,
in response.
And for an online survey, yeah. It's better than most that we've...
Well, yeah, but this is not, you're not sending out to John Q. Public. This,
right.
This is not
yeah,
collaborative.
That's a little surprising.
Everybody has a vested interest in this theoretically. So, you know, I do think that action will generate participation and all that kind of stuff.
All
so
right.
as the Urban Institute starts, you know, the collaboration and then that you know, that all the details get worked out, I think that will make a difference.
Okay, well, too, didn't you say at the last meeting that a number of people hadn't gone on to the base camp yet, so they may not be getting the mail?
This wasn't exclusively for base camp.
It wasn't, no. I have copied other people who, Jim, I know, is still not getting base camp messages, so I had copied his email on there.
I put the whole address in the trouble,
so I'll talk with Karen and make sure that you get in there. She's in charge of that piece. So... Yeah, well, you know, the survey was really intended as feedback for SCOPE as facilitators to get a sense on how people are feeling with the collaborative, how we might improve our own facilitation, and we'll send out another survey later on in the year to see changes and improvements and see. You know, it was just a way for people to give an honest feedback for the...
Might be worthwhile to have a discussion at the meeting before you send it out. Because
mm-hmm.
I struggled with it. It felt like it was coming out of the blue. So just, you know, to say, you know, and then you might get some ideas on the kinds of topics that might be important that people would want to respond to anonymously by talking about it a little bit before.
Okay.
I should comment. The old business school... I think it used to be about 5%, maybe it was 7%. As the standard for a good survey response. So what this little project here reflects, if nothing else, is that the 25 base that was used is a good target for getting responses, because you got almost 50% here. And that says something in itself, even more than what answers you got, that you're asking the right people at this point. Then you get quality of response.
Okay. Yeah, well, definitely before we send out the next one, we'll have a discussion or at least let you guys know in the meeting before. And I also wanted to share this map, which the colors kind of make it difficult to look at, but these are the participant data collaborative member work addresses and home addresses. And I thought this would be a neat one to share because we're starting to really have representation of the collaborative around the county. There's always room for improvement, of course, but that this would be a good one to share. Especially if you look at the home addresses, we're all over, so. Quality of life indicators.
SCOPE is going to be hosting a series of sessions, and we're going to go from data 2.0 to data 2.1. And this will be to further refine community indicators. And so one of the things that we want to do is share back with the community the data that was generated last year in the effort. And do that in a similar fashion to what was done last year.
Last year in the community data 2.0 session.
2.0 session. And then to further refine community indicators, perhaps create a dashboard style, and to work with Health and Human Services as we do that, because they're really our partner in that community indicator piece. But I see the collaborative as being a partner in that as well, of course. We don't have a schedule for those dates yet, but we're going to be working on that, and we'll be able to share that with you in a future meeting.
All right.
I know it seems like 5 or 6 years ago now, the county was looking at using Whatcom County and a couple other, that was a the county, the Whatcom County put together a dashboard sort of indicators thing, and I can't remember the generic name for it. Yeah, whatever it was. are they looking at that kind of platform? Because it was a platform.
I'm not familiar with that particular one.
So are they looking at a platform that would be populated with data, that, you know, a purchase platform? Because that was a purchase. That you would have to purchase this company was selling that.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to that point of whether we're going to purchase something or whether we would set it up with existing resources.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I mean, I we worked, the county itself on dashboard, worked through a number of different companies over the years. A lot of folks are out there actually providing software, so.
All right, reflection for decision making. This was over a month ago that you requested this, but I put it on the agenda.
We figured by this meeting we could give you an update on what's been transpiring in Central Coconut. We did have our grand opening of the Sarasota Community Studio, which is where Tim and I now are both fully employed. We work there. It's also our home neighborhood, but it's now a formal nonprofit organization that was established by neighbors, and it's all devoted to the neighborhood of Central Coconut, specifically around child well-being and neighborhood well-being. Around a few particular aspects of neighborhood well-being. In particular, I tend to focus on the child well-being, so if you want to speak to the indicators of
In addition to the child well-being, the idea is that the neighborhood itself also changes when the neighborhood focuses on child well-being, but specifically in the areas of housing, economy for jobs, the economy more generally, and then social justice issues. So those are three areas that are also areas of metrics that the neighbors are coming together.
So we do have a space now that has its own map gallery that's neighborhood specific, and generated a series of maps. Some of the data is consistent with the data that the collaborators have brought together, and then some other data, but that is focused on Central Coconut and then relative to the other areas in Midtown, and then relative to the city of Sarasota. That's sort of those are the scales that we're paying attention to. We have a series of indicators that are the sort of the preliminary list of things that we're tracking in the neighborhood, and many of those still don't have formal measurements as part of the process of identifying how you even go about measuring some of the things like joyful states in kids, you know, things like this that are often not yet measured. But then we also have this Saturday, the neighborhood meeting. So this is the time to come together as a neighborhood, integrating what we know as a neighborhood by virtue of all the pictures that neighbors have taken of kids out about meeting on the block, what kids have to say about it, which is sort of another kind of data, and then what the maps have to say about it, and then what we're going to actually do about it, if anything, as a neighborhood, what is it that together. So it's sort of at a particular, you know, neighborhood scale, and with an emphasis on the ultimate role of action.
So I would say this is the data collaborative coming to life in the neighborhood, because the data that the neighborhood is considering is very much the kind of data that we're talking about being generated, that we as a collaborative are talking about generating at the neighborhood scale. For example, this one of the pieces of data explicitly is how are all the kids in this neighborhood doing on the third grade reading score. That data would not have been available were it not for sitting down with the school board and having them recast their data into neighborhood specific information, because they don't have it that way.
But it also, I think you could hear that the people at the last meeting, the frustration as we got nearer to that deadline of not having the data in user-friendly form, you know. So we were able to get the data to the point where now I can say, okay, here's how many kids are in our neighborhood for each of the grades through five and relative to all the other neighborhoods. You know, here's, you know, the number of kids at each school, which has helped us to define which schools to really focus on partnering with. So we've been going to more things at Goshio Elementary, for instance, because we know that there are a whole lot, you know, the majority of the kids go to Goshio, but then also Bay Haven, because as it turns out, the magnet school, but nonetheless, there are as many kids there as at the second most populated school in our neighborhood.
So there's that. The FCAT data, we were able to organize that, and the, you know, for reading and for math, but it really, you know, I think part of the reason why it's going to be so important to get the data, you know, out and aired is that it really does make it clear to everybody, not just the school district, but everybody, the limitations of the data as it's been contributed so far, right? Mm-hmm. So we only visualize on the maps that we've created any neighborhood that had at least 10 kids in a given grade who took the FCAT. Because it seemed like it was really silly to say that 100% of the kids in the neighborhood scored 3 or above on the FCAT if there were only 2 kids, you know? So there were things that it was once we really started thinking through, well, what is meaningful, what's a meaningful comparison, or what's a way to really understand this data that we could begin to see how it could be tweaked. So, but it is, I mean, it's, you know, it's really changed the nature of the conversation in the neighborhood to be able, and again, I think that this is not just the map data. That's why the fact that this platform is intended to also encourage people to upload their pictures and their stories and their videos, because if it were not for the fact that, you know, we have a big map of Central Coconut relative to all the other neighborhoods in terms of third grade reading, the percentage of kids in our neighborhood compared to. But if it were not for the bulletin board next to it with over 100 pictures of kids out and about reading in the neighborhood, it would be really easy to draw inappropriate conclusions about what the numbers say.
It's the combination of the lived experience along with the data that really allows the neighborhoods to make decisions. I think of you guys who are from the neighborhoods, and this is, you know, this is really how this idea of how is it decisions get made by residents instead of by institutions, it really comes to life in a way that's, that we think is this beautiful combination of stories, lived experience, and the data at this scale. So we have some postcards that we, these are actual, this is the data, so you, it's a packet that shows degrees, fours, and...
It's not a, I mean, we grab them all up, we have a funny place now that has like a
postcard
rack. So we have them all in post-it, we just grab them off the rack before you...
They're all different.
They aren't necessarily all in, all
different. Oh, they're all different?
They're all different.
They're all one color would be all of them.
Different colors. I don't know how many you have to in there.
It's really just trying to show you that what's happening at a neighborhood scale.
And it's a different thing when people can kind of hold like a debit card truly.
I didn't get the one with the soda acres on there.
There's one at the end that also shows housing. So there's two
seats.
This is all one package.
Well, there is a whole set. We also, this. So when, like, we met with the principal of the elementary school, we would go through and say, okay, so, you know, here's
maybe
all the kids, let's say, you know, here are of the 340 kids in our neighborhood who go to public school, here's how many go to each of the schools. And so we can see that many more go to Goshu, and this includes, you know, Riverview High School and Booker. Mm-hmm. But then you can go through and say, okay, so let's just take a look, for instance, at Goshu. So we know that actually for our neighborhood there are more kids who go to Goshio than go to any other neighbor or any other school. But in fact, Kensington Park has 200 kids who go to Goshio. So what happens is if you only looked at the school data, then you would make assumptions about kids in our neighborhood that might not be the case. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and then this is just to show it as a chart, and this is the way to show it as a map. And then to say, okay, of all the kids, then you can look at things like the reading, and even third grade reading, it was really helpful to sit down with the principal of Goshio after having gone through this with neighbors and say, so look at the difference between where, you know, what kids who go, who are taking the FCAT reading, how kids from our neighborhood are doing as compared to the majority of kids at Goshio who are from this other neighborhood, and the school could also start to see differences. And it's a way to start bringing your own neighborhood into focus in the minds and consciousness of the schools in a different way. So, again, ours is focused on the neighborhood, so we only look at our neighborhood relative to the ones that are immediately surrounding our neighborhood, the contiguous neighborhoods. But, you know, it draws from the data that's available, you know, for all the neighborhoods. So, anyway, that's kind
where we're at in terms of trying to, as you said, bring it to life and use it for decision-making steps.
There's one map in there that shows a survey that the local neighbors are doing of the housing stock, 800 parcels of property in this neighborhood, 48 blocks. And it's looking explicitly at the vacant properties. It's only about a third done. When it's all done, then the neighborhood will come together and say, so what is this telling us, and what is it that we can do about it?
What is the definition of a vacant property?
You visually go by and look at a piece of property, do your best job of assessing whether anybody's living in it. We look at things like whether or not there's trash in the property, whether or not there's grass over 10 inches high, whether or not it's boarded, and all of those are a part of the mapping process.
So you're actually driving around?
No, we're walking. So that's the neighbors are walking door to door and looking at each piece of property.
So you've got to refresh all this data. You've got to be doing all these elements of data that you're gathering.
Well, the point is it's not for the collection alone, it's for decision making.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that we're through with the survey, which will be done in the next 2 or 3 weeks, how is it that we as neighbors come together and say, okay, so now what? Maybe the answer is, that's not so bad. Or maybe the answer is, holy moly, that's terrible. What do we do about it? And then the question is, so what is it that we can do, and what is it that we can't do? So that's sort of the process. And this housing thing is, it may be that we don't do this for once every 2 or 3 years. I don't know yet. That's what we as neighbors are going to decide. But the idea of this data is so that decisions get made. And we're doing the same thing. There are 150 employers within a half an hour walk of the neighborhood, the center of the neighborhood. We're engaging each of those employers to learn about them, and we'll map that, and then we'll use that as a mechanism as neighbors to engage in relationship with those employers to see whenever they have openings, how is it that people in the neighborhood are the ones who might have access to that information.
I've been listening to this, and I think I see a PowerPoint let's assume right now that you finished your walk around housing development. One thing would be showing that kids did well in school regardless of whether their house was dilapidated, or they did much better if the house was...
Well, you raised a really important point, because the reason that the housing and the economic issues are even on the table is because that they were identified either both positively, that my house matters to me, it's an issue, or that the houses in the neighborhood are significant and I pay attention to them as a kid, or negatively, and that people find themselves pushed out of the neighborhood because of bad landlords, or because the house is in bad repair, or whatever, fill in the blank. And as a result, the kids end up with a housing stability challenge, and that influences the well-being of a child. So that we're paying attention to those topics at all is because of the emphasis on...
Yeah, I mean, that was just one angle, but there's enough stuff in there. You pick 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Connective things and show them by sliding the map colors or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to get that thing that we talked about 2 meetings ago where you see the effect of sanding on shorelines is somewhere on one of our computers. But, I mean, this is what I'm seeing. It would be really powerful for the whole concept of working.
So I think that the beauty of this is just a living example just coming to life of some of what the data collaborative can be for other neighborhoods.
Thanks for sharing that.
I do have one question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you had mentioned that the neighborhood would decide about when you refresh the information. But to compare it to another neighborhood, wouldn't it make sense to have the same, because if you're doing it every 2 years, but the next neighborhood is doing it every 3 years, you really are not comparing apples to apples.
Well, the truth is, I don't get the example of the survey of housing. If there's another neighborhood doing that, I don't know. So we're, that's a decision that comes out of this neighborhood.
Okay.
The other data that Allison was talking to specifically, those are data sources that are not surveyables.
So as soon as other neighborhoods start to work
sure.
on it, then you can,
that's
okay.
Right.
I just wanted
yeah.
to figure
yeah,
out
how to pay attention to each other.
Okay. Thank you. It looks really interesting.
Yeah, something like that. Just a couple. Just how many people are participating as far as neighbors in your area that are working on that project, the housing project?
Well,
come together?
Not as many as we would like, but about a half dozen.
Okay. And do you have regular meetings, or how is that looking in your...
You know, mind you, we our opening is 2 weeks ago. So
if your nonprofit is basically the hub, though, for that neighborhood.
The hub is actually the term we've used, too. But, you know, we don't want to delude you in the fact that everything happens there. It actually happens out in the neighborhood. So, for example, although the meeting this weekend is happening at the studio, the following weekend, the neighbors are coming together around redoing a park that was as a result of the prize that the kids won. So there are things happening all over the place.
But it's definitely like, you know, in an infant health, if a baby first comes into the world and it hasn't gotten all of its systems kind of regulated yet, that's how it feels. Like sometimes there's like a gazillion people in this environment, it's a sufficient number of children in it. So it would be interesting to see if it actually kind of develops a rhythm so far. It's like, it starts to get on its mind.
I just had a question. Who would be the customer for your data?
Well, without doubt, the very people who are living in the neighborhood are, the idea is decision-making. So the neighborhood sort of generates some of the data, certainly looks at all of it, and they're the ones who use it as the fodder for decision-making. Now, that's not to say that everything that happens will only be able to be done by people who live in the neighborhood. So on occasion, it will be, here's an issue that might benefit from engaging in a partnership relationship with, fill in the blank, the county, the city, a nonprofit, a somebody else. But the idea here is that first investors are neighbors, then when necessary, the neighborhood seeks second investors. But we don't want to ever do it from the standpoint of saying, we're broken, can you fix us? So the idea is, we know stuff, and here's what we've done to address this. But we can't do this without partnering with you. So the idea is, how the decision making happens sequentially is really a big deal. Because usually places think in terms of what are they going to do to make my art better. You know, at least that's the potential. This is sort of flipping that on its head.
Thanks a lot. I like his postcards.
We bought a paper cutter.
Nice. So, all right, we're about wrapped up here. Next meeting location, this week or this month we met in Northport. Really.
Anyone have,
yeah,
a nice location they'd like to suggest for the next meeting? And then we'll see how well that works with the team. Seek a note taker.
We had something like a Board of Ed that I think had more people at it than any other meeting we've had, and maybe that was convenient.
What one?
Where
you're
the landing.
The landing, yeah. Midpoint. We don't have anybody here from the board, school board today, but you can certainly check with them to see if that location might be available.
Does that sound good to folks? The landings for next time?
I can't say anything to the north point this
time. I think there's enough bad turnout.
Yeah, I really, I know you're disappointed, but I think this is a pretty good turnout.
I
had less than other
people came here. Don't ever get the idea that I'm not. I just was hoping that the others, there were a number of people that didn't want to come down here because it was too far.
Let's tell them we had ice cream.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, we were catered.
You know, we got the northernmost, you know, you know, probably the northernmost part of the county.
Yeah.
We got Siesta Key, we got Kona. I mean, we got some good participation. Thanks for coming.
All right. So,
I was like the city hall in Northport.
Yeah.
Been here many times.
Does anyone want to volunteer to be a note taker next time?
No.
No.
I don't know if I'll be able to raise the meeting.
Yeah, that's okay. Key. It's difficult because that's a BCC meeting day, and I have to be there.
All right. Well, we'll send that out via email, that request, and I'll keep everyone posted on meeting location and time. All right. Thank you, City of Northport. Any other announcements?
Thanks,
before we wrap up? All right, meeting adjourned.
Thanks, everybody. And I think it's done away with it. And I'm doing that.
No, but look, for the first time, it's broken foot. It's a repetitive.
Everyone up here is very shy of working out.